gonna call the Planning Commission meeting to order. Welcome, everybody. March 15th Planning Commission meeting following May. I'm 2 months off. You're right. Thank you for correcting me. Item two on the agenda, Pledge of Allegiance. Commissioner Voss, can you lead us, please? Thank you very much. Item three on our agenda, roll call.
Commissioner Voss.
Here.
Commissioner McKenzie.
Here.
Chairman Martinez.
Here.
Commissioners Whitmore and Sloan are excused tonight.
Okay, thank you. Item four, minutes. I don't believe we saw minutes this evening, right? Okay. Item five, correspondence.
There is no correspondence tonight.
Correspondence, moving right along. Item six on our agenda, citizens addressing the commission on non-agenda items. So if there's something that's not on this evening's agenda packet, now would be the time to address the commission. Otherwise, we'll just work through the agenda and there'll be an opportunity for the public to speak on each agenda item. So anything that's not on the agenda that someone wants to speak on? Okay, seeing none, we will move to public hearing, item number seven. On the agenda, continued from May 1st, 2018, AAA building at Secret Ravine, design review DR 2018-0001, use permit U2018-001. Staff presentation, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening. Nathan Anderson with the Planning Department. Tonight I'll be presenting an application for design review and a use permit to allow construction of an approximately 6,800 square foot building, the AAA auto repair facility at Secret Ravine. So the project site is directly east of Sierra College Boulevard, it's south of Schreiber Way. The project site is a vacant 1.2 acre pad within the 3.5 acre center at Secret Ravine Shopping Center. The site is designated retail commercial in the general plan and is zoned planned development commercial within the center at Secret Ravine General Development Plan. So a little bit of brief background on that. The City Council approved that project, the Center at Secret Ravine project, in 2011. That included a tentative parcel map to subdivide the site into four parcels, a general development plan to establish zoning and design guidelines, a design review to approve the center's site design, and a use permit to allow outside storage and sales. In 2014, the city approved the Shell gas station at the center at Secret Ravine, which is shown right here, which allowed construction of operation of an approximately 3,000 square foot gas station, convenience store, and a drive-in car wash, the center's northwestern parcel. To date, this is the only parcel to be developed within the center. However, drive aisles and landscaping building pads were constructed in the center in 2015-2016. You can see those here. The project proposes construction on parcel two, which is located on the northeastern corner of the center. The project would construct an approximately 6,800 square foot building with associated parking and landscaping. The site would be accessed by two existing driveways, one off of Schreiber, which is up here, and the other off of Bass Pro Drive down here. No off-site improvements at all have been proposed as part of this project. So while, as I said, the majority of the site improvements throughout the center were already constructed, the proposed project would involve the demolition and redevelopment of a small portion of the existing parking lot to allow access to the service bays on the north side of the building here. So the modifications would remove 14 parking spaces along the southern portion of the existing pad. It would relocate seven of them to the western side of the proposed building and two of them up here to the north side of the building. So this would decrease the parking on site by five spaces. However, the center would still have a total of 106 spaces. And based on the calculations, this is sufficient parking to accommodate both the existing, proposed, and anticipated future development within the center, consistent with the code and consistent with the general development plan. With regard to architecture, the proposed building would include parapet walls, varied roof heights. It would utilize stone veneer, stucco finish, and would feature strong horizontal elements, which would help break up the building plane. Spandrel glass is proposed to be utilized on several areas to create faux windows and give further interest to the building. In addition, aluminum and glass roll-up doors would be installed at the service bays, and steel canopies would be utilized over the building entrances. According to the general development plan, the center would be constructed with buildings which utilize natural-looking materials, low-pitched and gable roof elements, towers, and natural or manufactured stone. So the black and white figures, which are shown on the bottom there, are examples of the architecture that was envisioned when the center was approved. These are actual examples within the general development plan. So staff believes that the proposed architecture is consistent with these design criteria and recommends approval of the design review. With regard to the use permit, according to the general development plan, auto repair light is a conditionally allowed use within the center. The proposed facility, as I stated, would be a AAA car care center with 8 service bays. The use would provide light general maintenance only, which would include oil changes, tire replacement, rotation, alignment. It would include belt repair, battery replacement, things of that nature. There would be no heavy repair, no transmissions, no engine replacement, no body work, no painting. It's all light repair service. Operations would occur Monday through Fridays from 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. and Saturdays from 8 until 5 p.m. One more thing, a noise study was prepared for the project, which determined that the project would comply with the City of Rockland's daytime noise standards. It's pretty loud along Sierra College Boulevard already, so it was determined by the noise study that the noise which would result from this project would actually be less than the noise levels which already occur within the area. So there'd be no increase to levels of noise based on this use within the area. Regarding CEQA, the project was previously analyzed. An initial study, mitigated negative deck, was approved by the City Council for the Center CEQA Ravine project in 2011. Based on a 15162 analysis of the project, no new significant environmental impacts would occur and no substantial increases in the severity of the previously identified significant effects would be anticipated. So therefore, long story short, no further environmental review is necessary for this project. In closing, staff supports the project and recommends approval. It's consistent with the design of the center. The uses would not be anything detrimental to the area and are compatible with the other uses. So that concludes our presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any questions from commissioners? No. I don't either at this time. Thank you. Is there a applicant representative who wants to speak on behalf of this project?
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Tiffany Wilson with RSC Engineering, the applicant for the project representing AAA. Really here, if you have any questions specific for us, we're in agreement with the draft conditions prepared by staff, and we're just excited to get the project approved and to move forward with the CDs that we're hoping to submit shortly.
Any questions from Tiffany? Seeing none, thank you very much. At this time, we'll open it up to the public. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak with respect to this project? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the commission for deliberation and or a motion.
I'm in favor of the project and would be willing to make a motion to that effect if there's no further discussion.
Similarly, I find the architecture consistent with the general development plan, the use permit, and the conditions attached to it make the findings acceptable from my perspective, so I support the project.
Great, thanks. I'll entertain a motion.
Okay, great. I'd like to move item 7A as written.
There's a motion to approve.
You know what, we'll just take them together.
Take
7A and B, moved.
7A and B.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Hearing none, passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Item 8 on our agenda, Knights Way Tentative Parcel Map, Division of Land, DL 2018-0001. Have a staff presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Good evening. Shauna Nauman, assistant planner. The project before you is located at 4925 Knights Way. The subject property is a 14,180 square feet parcel that was created in December 1990 as part of the Stanford Ranch Phase 3 subdivision. The site is currently developed with a single family residence that was built in 1997. The westerly half of the property is essentially vacant, and this is the area that's proposed for parcel two. Two oak trees that had previously been preserved on the site had succumbed to disease and by 2012 had been removed by the property owner. Once the oak trees were removed, the reason for the larger parcel no longer exists. Street improvements currently exist along the property frontage, and utilities already provided to the site have sufficient capacity to serve the additional lot. The site has general plan designation of medium density residential and is zoned PD6, which is single family residential, six dwelling units per acre. The site is surrounded on all sides by properties within the same general plan designation and of the same zoning. Creation of one additional lot on the in the subdivision will not change the overall density for this, and will the proposed lot sizes are consistent with the surrounding lot sizes as demonstrated on the graphic now before you. The 14,180 square foot parcel is proposed to be split into two parcels. Parcel one would be 8,178 square feet, and parcel two would be 6,002 square feet. The existing house on parcel one would remain in compliance with the setbacks and lot coverage requirements for the PD6 zone. The proposed parcel map would be consistent with all the requirements within the PD6 districts, including minimum lot area, minimum width, and maximum lot coverage as shown on the table before you. The existing house is about 30% for the new parcel to be created. The currently vacant parcel that would be created could accommodate a footprint of about 2,400 square feet at the maximum 40% lot coverage, and could accommodate a house in similar size to the rest of the neighborhood. The project is exempt from CEQA pursuant to California Code Regulation Section 15315, Minor Land Divisions, and a notice of exemption has been prepared for your adoption. The Planning Commission is the designated approving authority for the project pursuant to Section 16.16.170 of the Rockland Municipal Code. A blue memo was provided that contains correspondence from an adjacent property owner along with some additional information from the applicant that you have received. Staff recommends the Planning Commission adopt both the resolutions that have been presented and are before you, and recommends that you approve the CEQA notice of exemption and the project as conditioned. That concludes the staff presentation, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any questions from staff? For staff? No questions?
One question. I didn't see it in the staff report, so I just want to confirm. In your review of the project application, there's no conditions historically or easements or anything that would have otherwise restricted that parcel from being developed, with the exception of the oak trees that were preserved and are now subsequently
correct.
Removed.
Correct. The only indication I could find on the original map was that it was sized that way to protect those two large oak trees that have since died.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Nothing else? Okay. Thank you. Is there an applicant representative who wishes to speak on behalf of this project?
Good evening, Chairman. Good evening, Commissioners. Anthony Cochi, Surveyors Group. I'm here to answer any questions or concerns you may have.
I have no questions, Commissioners, none. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, if there's anyone from the public who wishes to address the commission on this project, now would be the time. Certainly, come up.
Yes, my name is Elvis Lloyd. I live on Knight's Way as well. I question if the building itself has been approved. Do we have a square footage, a minimum square footage that we plan to build there? My worry is you put a 1,200 square foot house on the property, and the rest of us in the neighborhood are subject to regression, and our house is now worth a lot less than what we bought them for. That's a big problem from what I see.
Do you have any other questions? And we'll just kind of take them all and then answer
them
all.
My other worry with the city is when I talked on the phone, I was unable to write a letter in advance. I just didn't have the time. But you guys seem to, from who I talked to, it almost seemed like it was already pre-approved before we ever got to this point, which concerns me greatly just as a citizen and a taxpayer. That's a big problem I see as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Staff, can you address the first question regarding, obviously no building permit appears to be in right now, but what's available option-wise for the...
Well, the zoning is the zoning. It allows up to 40% lot coverage with designated setbacks that are the same as those applied throughout the neighborhood. The Rockland Municipal Code, excuse me, requires a minimum 1,200 square foot house. That's the smallest house you can build. Or 1,050 square foot. Typically, the market drives it, so I would not anticipate a home of that size being built here, but it would be up to whoever buys it. The city, this is not a design review lot, so the city has no regulatory authority as long as they comply with the zoning that's applicable, already applicable to the site. Whoever buys it could build whatever size home they like. As far as what the speaker's interpretation of whatever was said at the counter or on the phone, the whole point of a public hearing is so everyone has their chance at getting their opinions heard and considered by the Planning Commission and or the council, and that's why we're here. So
right. Okay, thank you.
And on that, just I'd like to add, staff does make a recommendation of approval on this item, and that's staff's recommendation based upon the fact that the proposal is consistent with the city and the state law requirements. So staff recommends approval. In their judgment, it meets all of the standards, and the proposal is a reasonable proposal, and that all the findings that are required by law and by the city's ordinances can be made. Of course, as Mr. Finning indicated, the Planning Commission is the approval authority, and you are the ones that may have the final decision on whether or not the parcel map should be approved or not.
Thank you. Certainly, sir, come up.
Thank you, panel. My name is David Jones. I'm a concerned homeowner on Stanford Ranch as well. My question is, has the applicant met the covenants, conditions, and restrictions that we have to abide by when we purchase the home? And just a little bit of history. That there were four models that we chose from in this tract development. And if this home goes in, will it meet the architectural design of the other homes? Because this was the last phase of the developer. So you've got about 16 to 18 homes that all meet the four modeled homes. Now there was in the CCRs an architectural control committee that would make sure that the design meets the specifications of the other homes. So really that's my question, as has the applicant, or will the applicant, when they build a home, meet the specifications in the CCNRs? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take all questions for, so go ahead next, if you want to approach and ask.
I'm also a resident in Stanford Ranch, and this is the first I've heard of it. We've been there for 10 years, and knowing what's going on and seeing where the oak trees were, we have a really hideous resident that's next to us, and I'd hate to see what happens if that were to go on that property. I really wouldn't want that to happen, because we've had three renters move in next to us, and I wouldn't want that to happen, especially on that property, because I saw that oak tree when we first moved in, and it was beautiful. And to see something split like that, I wouldn't want that to happen in that area. So I really wouldn't want that to happen.
Okay,
so
thank you.
So please do not do that in that area.
Good evening, I'm Ken Forsyth, the homeowner in the same area. I actually have a question from the CCNRs. I'm not sure whether article, I think it's 8, allows subdivision of existing parcels without Of course, there was a time limit of a certain number of years, and then until such time or Stanford Ranch Inc. didn't own 20% of the property, and after that it seemed to indicate that amendments that would affect things like the CC&R subdivision would require 51% of the owners of the entire development. So I think that's a significant question. I could certainly understand if I had a piece of property adjacent, which I don't, but if I had a piece of property adjacent to, and I'd purchased that property in anticipation of either oak trees being there or certainly not another dwelling being there, I might have done things with and for my house, considering, you know, preserving the value of what I purchased. And so I can see that that would be a legitimate concern of those who are immediately contiguous with this proposed development.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Sure.
I'm also a resident in Knights Way. I think just wanted to state a couple of things. There's obviously occupants who've owned property in the area since the houses were built, and to the previous gentleman's point, you know, they were bought with this view in mind. Now suddenly there's going to be a house on there, which suddenly impacts their own views out of their house and also views into their house. Suddenly a house much closer to the neighbor's fence is suddenly now looking into your garden with much greater ease. Secondly, we're now an established residence, and the point is now it's going to be, for a period of time, it will be now created back into a construction zone with heavy traffic. We've got children, many children who play in this area, and that is a concern of mine, that suddenly we've got more traffic going in and heavy traffic during the period of construction, which is, what, likely 3 to 4 to 6 months? I think those are the other small point was the fact that they were designated as 6 houses per acre, and when you divide and look at the size of this plot, it's 0.14, which doesn't actually accommodate, it doesn't meet that 6 houses per acre. Now I know the precedent is perhaps set with some others that are less than the 0.16 required, but there is a, if you, you know, what's the point of having rules if suddenly you're going to break the rules and then allow a smaller lot to be divided and a house is going to be onto it. My other slight concerns were the letters seemed to come very late close to this, which, as we'd already stated, we didn't get time to receive the letter in the mail and then respond in writing. And the fact that it was only distributed to a 600-feet radius does not seem quite the big enough area. You've got houses which are also going to be impacted more than 600 feet away. The fact that when the trees are removed, the two previous oak trees, which were designated as part of this area, it also seems like slightly erroneous that those oak trees are not meant to be replaced and regrown in its place. It seems we've sold this as a special area with oak trees, established oak trees for a reason, and now there seems no requirement to replace them, which seems slightly erroneous in my opinion. So, just my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Young Victor. I am actually owner of the house right next to that property. So my house is facing the side. If there's a house built, then my house, the back of my house will be facing side of that house. So I am concerned because when I purchased that house, purposely because back up of my house there was nothing. It's an open view, and that was a valuable point that we purchased the house. If that house is built, and then that house, the side of the house will be against my backyard, and that will decreased my house value, and that is my concern. And also, I do have a pool in the backyard, and then that house will be against my backyard fence. So I am concerned about privacy. And I understand this is for the division of land, but there's a potential unknown what kind of house will be built, and then that will impact on my house value. So that is my concern. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's Andy Loberg. I'm a homeowner directly behind this proposed lot split. I did submit my opposition in writing to this, but just wanted to make sure you knew I showed up for the record, and that, you know, again, our concerns are the fact that by adding a home to this neighborhood, it doesn't really present any added value to the neighborhood. You know, the neighborhood's built out. And there's a concern of precedence being set where people have, within our neighborhood still, preserved oaks that potentially, you know, could find their way to not be standing anymore, and then eventually do the same thing based on, you know, as property values go up, obviously vacant land becomes, you know, a prime situation. So, but those are my concerns there. And of course, for me, buying the home new and having paid a lot premium for no lot behind me, that lot premium should still exist when I go to sell my home, because that would be an advantage that other homes don't have in the neighborhood that I have, because that's why I bought the house I did when I did. So this would create a definite loss in value for my property, and I don't see any situation where it would actually add value to the neighborhood as a whole. So that's all I had to say.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. I do have, whether it's staff or council, the question related to CCNRs and what the city's obligations or abilities to enforce those can be. Can you clarify that for us?
Sure. CCNRs are regulations placed on projects by developers over and above the city regulations. They are not enforced by the city, and they are not city law. So typically, CCNRs are enforced by either the developer or an homeowners association that's established when the developer goes away. In this case, when the developer left and was finished with the development, there was no homeowners association established, to the best of my knowledge and understanding, and therefore it's up to individual homeowners if they want to try and enforce the provisions of the CCNRs on an individual basis, which, as I understand it, typically involves hiring lawyers. But that is not a city issue or a city concern, and we do not enforce CCNRs.
Okay, thank you. Is there anything, council, that you'd like to add? Dan?
No, Mr. Finney summarized the requirements that, you know, when the city looks at something, they're looking at the city ordinances and state law, or if you know, the city's aware of any restriction. I didn't hear staff say that they're aware that this proposal conflicts with any of the existing CCRs. I don't know for a fact, but I don't think it does. Anything that the developer property owner does would, of course, need to comply with the CCNRs, but as staff indicated, the CCNRs are enforceable generally through private property owners and not through the city. So if there's any questions?
It's good with me. Thank you very much. Any other comments or questions from planning commissioners?
I was just wondering if you could explain how residential oak tree mitigation occurs if there was a diseased tree. What is the process for getting rid of that? Do they have to then plant a new tree, or do they have to pay a fee to remove the tree, or how does that work?
On a developed residential property, when an oak tree dies or is diseased or becomes a hazard, and we require typically either as proof an arborist report, or the tree has to be obviously dead, no leaves, no sign of life, then there is no fee, no mitigation for its removal. If a tree is healthy and the property owner wants to take it out, then there is a formula that they either can pay in lieu fees that the city will use elsewhere to preserve or plant additional oak trees, or they can plant trees in lieu of paying, on they have to be on the site. In this instance, the oak trees became diseased and fell during a storm, the first one. The other one was damaged and became a hazard, and so they were removed without requirement for mitigation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe one more question relative to, you know, minimum, maximum building. Obviously, you know, this is a single family home subject to a building permit. We have minimum requirements. I think I heard in the staff report that if they hit the maximum, which is another concern on the opposite end of the spectrum, you know, maximum of 40% lot coverage roughly equate to 2,400 square feet worth of home. So at least we have that range. Was I correct in my hearing?
Yeah, and I could just clarify that. That's the footprint. So if it was a two-story house, you could conceivably double that. Okay. So it could potentially be a 4,000 square foot home, depending on how it's designed.
Thank you.
Assuming it also meets all of its setbacks.
And again, if there were any architectural committee requirements in the CCNRs, wouldn't be enforced by the city, a homeowner within under those CCNRs would be able to enforce that, possibly through some civil action, and to ensure that the CCNRs are
correct, consistent with whatever the standards set up in the CCNRs say.
Okay.
I just have a question about the notices. How far in advance do we send out notices to residents about meetings?
Depends on the type of environmental that's required. A minimum of 10 days is the minimum. In this instance, because it was an exemption, it was a 10-day notice. The city does mail out to a 600-foot radius, which is double what the state requires as a minimum. We also put it on our website. We put it in the Placer Herald, and we post it on the site. We put a sign on the site to try and maximize the potential for people to know. So we go way above and beyond what the state requires.
And all that happens at least 10 days in advance between the sign posting and notice.
Correct.
In the newspaper. Okay, great.
We've already closed the public hearing, and the CCNRs are outside of our purview. I think we've asked the questions about what authority we have in considering those. So with that said, continuing here with the commission, any additional deliberation or?
I just wanted to ask a question about lot size as well, because someone had indicated that that seemed a little small. When we calculate lot size 6 per acre, what is included in that, and you know, what do we take away from that when we're figuring out 6 per acre? Do we factor in the streets that are in there, sidewalks? How are we figuring that?
In an undeveloped site, we would look at gross acreage. In an infill site like this, we take it as a part of the neighborhood whole, so we take it as part of the original subdivision. Obviously, it would never be possible to split a lot like this if you took it only on the existing lot size. So we have to take it on a larger level. Again, trying to be consistent with the city's application of the standards with the original development.
And then, I'm sorry, I can't see that far away. Are there others in the neighborhood that are the 0.14?
There's quite a few.
Okay.
I'm trying to see if I can make it a little bigger.
Oh, thank you.
Does that help?
Yes, I can see some now.
So as you can see, most of the homes are 1.14 or slightly larger, but they're all in that general range.
Okay. And then as far as traffic that and construction and whatnot, the city has regulations whether you're building a new home or whether somebody has construction on a patio or something that they're doing, and there's certain mitigations and whatnot that would be required when they're going to build that, right, to minimize the impact on the neighborhood.
There are times when construction is allowed and not allowed. Basically during the daytime, start times are limited. I don't have the numbers or the in front of me. I can't remember them off the top of my head right now, but yes, there are restrictions on when construction activities can occur, and typically it's during the daytime, normal course of business hours.
Okay, and this would apply to anybody who's doing a project on their house or an addition or whatnot?
Addition, any remodel, etc. The other thing I think I should point out is that whether this lot is divided or not, there was always the potential for the current owners or a future owner to build either a larger house, extend the existing home into this area, or under state law, they can build up to a 1,200 square foot accessory dwelling unit on the site. And that's not something the city can say no to. As long as they meet the setbacks and stuff, the state has said we have to approve it. So just not subdividing this lot does not guarantee that it will never be developed.
Right, thanks for pointing that out. That's an important thing to consider.
Thank you. So at this time, I'm willing to entertain a motion.
Maybe just a little bit more, deliberation.
Sure.
Relative to, you know, we've seen these, particularly in the older parts of town, come forward. You know, so it's different because it's in a newer neighborhood than the historic neighborhoods and some of those super large lots that end up getting subdivided over time. So, you know, looking at this one, you know, I've received answers on my questions relative to, you know, is there something with that parcel, an easement, something that got recorded against the title or something that would prohibit it from being split? And, you know, received the answer that there isn't, to the best of the city staff's knowledge. So, you know, I start looking at these splits of property for findings. Hey, if I was to try and make findings as to findings for denial, how would I go about that? So I start with, you know, does it comply with a lot size? Is it inconsistent with lot size or minimum lot size? In this case, it's consistent. Can you access the home that's to be built on it? Yes, you can. Does it have access to sewer and water? I presume so, because sewer and water in the street. Does it otherwise, if you were to build a normal single family home on there, would it comply with the setbacks and lot coverage? I think I've received the answers to those questions. And so, you know, to make findings for denial would be difficult from one commissioner's perspective, because at some point in time, your hands get tied. You know, I also live in a neighborhood with CCNRs and very active homeowners associations. So, you know, in my personal living experience, if you're inconsistent with those CCNRs, you know, the neighborhood and the homeowners association is going to quickly put a stop to it. But unfortunately, it's not something the city has purview over, because those are recorded against the property and enforced by a homeowners association. So from my perspective, you know, as much as it's different and difficult, in order to make findings for denial, from my perspective, would be difficult. And as staff pointed out, you know, state law currently, you could go in there and build that second dwelling unit consistent with state law. All we could do is approve a building permit, which is a ministerial action. Does it comply with all these requirements? And that would be something the homeowner could do today with or without, you know, a subdivision. So,
right. All good points. I mean, I guess I'll just chime in that I understand the concerns that are raised by the neighbors in that area. There's, for all the reasons the Commissioner McKenzie had mentioned, which I agree with, there's other things that I might look at, like is it adjacent to an open space or some, is it on the edge, where I think there's maybe a better argument that you have a view that you're losing or what have you. This is a standard size lot, like many of the lots in this subdivision. It's not out of character, not in size, not in its dimensions, not in its configuration. The homes here are single and two-story homes throughout. So I too would struggle to find any findings to deny something like this. This is just kind of a circumstance with the trees going down and the prior reason for having this portion vacant and part of a larger parcel. But at this point, it doesn't seem like it's a land, from a land division standpoint, really an issue. I think I would just, before maybe the commission takes any action, but advise the owner to scrutinize the CCNRs and abide by them. But with that said, I don't have anything else to offer.
I would echo what Commissioner Martinez and Commissioner McKenzie said as well. I am having a hard time finding within our purview a reason for denial of this as well.
So with that, can I entertain a motion?
Sure. I'll move to approve a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland approving a notice of exemption Knight's Way tentative parcel map DL 2018-0001.
I'll second.
Okay, a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
I'll move to approve a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland approving a tentative parcel map, Knight's Way tentative parcel map, DL 2018-0001.
And I will second.
Okay, motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All those opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, and parcel map's approved. So that now brings us to item 9 on our agenda this evening, RMC commercial marijuana use, zoning ordinance amendment ZOA 2018-0002.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, Commissioners. Dara Dunworth, Planning Division. I do not have a visual presentation for you this evening, so I will keep my report brief. This evening, staff is bringing forward for your consideration an ordinance amendment regarding the regulation of marijuana. Your action is not final. It would be a recommendation to the City Council for final approval. In response to state regulations enacted in the last 2 years, the City Council provided direction to staff in March of this year to develop new city regulations that would continue to prohibit all outdoor cultivation of marijuana and to prohibit all commercial marijuana activity within the City of Rockland. The proposed ordinance amendment would update the existing marijuana ordinance to be consistent with current state regulations by prohibiting commercial cannabis activity, allowing outdoor cultivation of marijuana consistent with state law, limited to a maximum of 6 plants and subject to other reasonable regulations, including some additional definitions and revising some existing definitions in the current code, and deleting the existing enforcement section and through a new violation section, imposing administrative penalties for each violation. These proposed penalties would differ from the newly enacted ordinance that City Council adopted back in March for other types of code violations. Attachment 1 to the staff report provides the proposed code text modifications in strikeout and underline format so you can see what's coming and what's going. Finally, the proposed ordinance amendment would also repeal the moratorium ordinance number 1080 that extended the original moratorium ordinance enacted in August of 2017. Staff does recommend your recommendation of approval on this ordinance amendment, and we are available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any questions of staff? Nope. I have none as well. This is a city-sponsored item, so at this time I'll open up the item to public. If anyone from the public wishes to speak on this item, seeing none, we'll bring it back to the Planning Commission, close the public hearing. Any comments, consideration from the Commission?
I support this recommendation, and I'd be ready to move if there's no discussion. Seeing none, I'd go ahead and move a resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Rockland recommending approval of an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rockland to repeal and enact Chapter 17.81, delete certain sections of Title 17 of the Rockland Municipal Code, and repeal Ordinance 1080 regarding regulation of marijuana, item ZOA 2018-0002.
Second. Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Hearing none, motion carries. And that takes us to our non-public hearing items. Item 10, presentation and informational items. Anything to share?
Not tonight.
Not tonight. Reports and discussion items from planning commissioners. Item 11, anything to share? Betterment in the group? Nope. Reports from city staff.
Nothing really. Just a reminder, our next meeting would be June 5th, but we have no items prepared for that meeting. So you get a night off.
Okay.
We do have items scheduled for June 19th. And just as a reminder, this is Deanne's last meeting, so.
And I just want to thank everyone. My time at Rockland's been fantastic, and I hope that I've helped and you've learned and I've learned. And I am very excited for the future of Rockland, and I am excited to hear the future progress. So I'll be looking forward to hearing about that. Okay,
thank you very much. We'll sorely miss you. Thank you for your input.
And just for an update, the council is going to appoint an interim city attorney. I'll leave it at that, to fill the gap in the city attorney's office. And then it has initiated a permanent city attorney recruitment so that there's a city attorney. And the thought is, and for staff too, to fill the city attorney position and then fill my position so the new city attorney can do that. And in the interim, there's going to be interim city attorney help. And of course, your former city attorney is still available and will be assisting in that. And, you know, as far as historic information, I'm always available. So to kind of tell you what the next few months are going to be for the city attorney's office.
Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you for your help and assistance over the years. It's always been very welcome and valuable and instructional. And so, yeah, you will be missed.
I'd like to echo that. Thank you so much for all of your hard work and for bringing me up to speed in the last year.
Yeah, I'd like you to know I spent about 3 days learning about marijuana and making sure that I understood the state law and the regulations and how we could regulate it. So I'm glad that, I was able to learn that and hopefully implement an ordinance that implements state law. So
it's Deanne Swan song.
Yeah.
Like, who would have thought 20 years ago that I'd be knowing what hemp is and marijuana, but I do now.
All right. Well, thanks again. That, I believe, concludes our meeting. Meeting adjourned.